Hi, and welcome back to the fifth episode of the Pathfinders podcast with myself, Connor Rees. I hope you have all enjoyed listening to the previous episodes featuring YouTubers, game directors, graphic designers, and even a UFC fighter. Today's episode was a very exciting interview for me to conduct with a figure in the video game industry who has worked on some of the biggest AAA titles around. This is an interview with Chad Grenier. Chad Grenier is a veteran in the video game industry, having began his career in 2002 when he left the modding community. He left to join a really small company that ended up creating one of the biggest multimedia names ever created, Call of Duty. Call of Duty is now known around the world as one of the biggest video games around. Chad worked on some of the highest reviewed and most loved Call of Duty games, such as Call of Duty 2, Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, and Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. Chad's role involved working on some of the most risky and complex missions in those games. After working at Infinity Ward for 8 years, Chad left the company to join the newly formed studio Respawn Entertainment to work on a completely new IP called Titanfall. Titanfall is a game that became the most awarded game at the 2013 annual video game showcase event called E3. It picked up over 60 awards. Respawn have since gone on to release a sequel to Titanfall called Titanfall 2, which was released in late 2016, as well as a Star Wars game called Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, which was released last year in November 2019. Today's interview looks at another hit in Respawn's portfolio, the free-to-play live service game called Apex Legends, which was released in February 2019. Chad Grenier now heads up the Apex Legends team at Respawn. Apex is a record-breaking game that changed a lot in the Battle Royale scene. It surprised the entire industry when it launched due to the stealth, and it managed to avoid leaks, so when it did launch, it was a complete surprise. It surpassed over 25 million players by the end of the week, and 50 million within its first month. Apex Legends was also awarded Best Multiplayer Game of 2019 at the Video Game Awards, which is basically the Oscars of the video game industry. Over the past year and a half since the game was released, it has continued to be one of the most popular shooting games out as it evolves, adds new content, characters, maps, and basically continually evolving. We've already explored the Battle Royale scene with our interview with PlayerUnknown, aka Brendan Green. However, PUBG was a game that you had to pay for, whereas Apex is a live service game that relies heavily on this free-to-play sector. With AAA games, even 5 years ago, the common model was to release a finished product for around £40 to £50, and then you may get a few bug patches down the line that perhaps fix certain elements of the game. You may also have had some DLC that added onto the story, or added a couple of multiplayer maps into the game a couple of months down the line. But as a whole, when the game launched and you paid £40 to £50, that was the finished product. The free-to-play market, especially for AAA titles, is very fascinating. They didn't really exist a couple of years ago, and it requires constant maintenance and analysis of data to keep players happy and engaged. These free-to-play titles require a lot of work, and the companies still need to make money. These games are constantly changing, and if people are enjoying what they're playing, they're likely to spend money on add-ons to the game, such as in-game cosmetics. At the end of the day, Respawn are a business and need to make money, so they have to persuade people to purchase outside of the core aspect of the game being free. From the outside looking in, it's a fascinating but very risky model. On the day one release, you don't get those £40 sales coming in. Instead, they're coming from cosmetics and other aspects inside the game. Apex is a game I've personally been playing a lot since it was launched, and I'm very excited to have the chance to sit down with Chad and talk more about the game, how it launched, and work out recently what went into their Season 6 launch last week. We are soon to launch Volume 6 of our print magazine, and exploring this live service free-to-play sector is something we will want to retouch on beyond Volume 6. Before we get into today's episode, you can find out more about our print magazine and all of the creatives we have interviewed across print, digital, and audio on our website. That's simply 99%lifestyle.com. But for today, please enjoy episode 5 of the Pathfinders podcast with Chad Grenier of Respawn Entertainment. Just to get things started, Chad, are you able to just give me a quick introduction to who you are and what you do?
Yeah, I'm Chad Grenier. I'm the game director on Apex Legends. So I'm essentially the head of the team, sort of the responsibility of that role is sort of the overall vision and direction of the game. Although, you know, most of that comes from the creative people on the team.
And how is it you came to work at Respawn? Are you able to give me a quick, brief story about your career before working at Respawn?
Yeah, a bunch of us go way back. Infinity Ward was formed maybe 17 or 18 years ago. There was a small group of 18 devs who formed Infinity Ward back in the day, who came from 2015, making this game called Medal of Honor, the very first one. And I was a modder for that, and so I was really excited that those guys formed a new studio, and I joined them working on Call of Duty, worked on four COD games, and then most of that team ended up leaving Infinity Ward and Activision and forming Respawn Entertainment 10 years ago. So I've kind of been involved with this, the core group of people at Respawn since, you know, the beginning of my career 18 years ago. And we have all sort of stuck together, and forming Respawn was just one thing that happened along that journey.
And I'm really interested to know what it was like working on those Call of Duty titles and what you learned that enabled you to move over to Respawn and start this franchise from scratch.
I think it's a few things. Like I mentioned, Call of Duty 1, we had, I believe, 18 people when I started. And by the time we shipped the first Call of Duty, I think we were maybe around 40. But when you have a small team like that, you learn how to do a lot of everything. You don't have specialists, you don't have a lot of production and process. It's much like, you know, a college project or something where there's a group of people sitting in a room together, collaborating and coming up with ideas, trying things, iterating, just kind of being tough on each other too, right? Saying, you know, that's bad. And being close enough with each other that you can have those conversations. And as we scaled the team for Call of Duty, that culture never changed. And we always valued, you know, rapid iteration and implementation and throwing work away if it's not working, and you know, not holding the work too close. You know, we call it like, it's, you know, your work is your baby. We say like sometimes you got to kill the baby, and you have to be okay with that. And so transitioning to Respawn, we're a much larger company now, but you know, we still iterate a ton. You know, probably we only ship a quarter of what we actually work on and what we make. I mean, we're constantly trying things and just having those honest, candid conversations with each other, saying, "Hey, this is a really great idea, but you know, I don't think it's working. Do you guys agree?" "Yeah, okay, let's move on to something else and cut our losses on it." And I think that's what's allowed us to both innovate, because we create that time and space for us to try things, and also has allowed us to be successful because we know when things aren't working and we don't just try to push it out the door because we've spent time and money on it. That doesn't matter to us. We want to end up with a good product in the end.
And can you talk me a bit about how Apex Legend as how it came about and how it launched? Because it's about a year and a half old now, is it?
Yeah, we just well, February will be our 2 year anniversary. This is definitely the most interesting game that I've ever worked on. We were actually working on another Titanfall game. We had shipped Titanfall 2, and then were acquired by EA, and we were planning to do another Titanfall game. EA was expecting us to do another Titanfall game, and we had actually been working on one. So we had a Titanfall game in the works, and we're play testing the campaign, and we're te play testing the multiplayer. And one of our designers, or maybe a couple of them, just got this bright idea. They had been playing a lot of PUBG. PUBG had just kind of gained popularity, and I think in like an afternoon, they made a new game mode in this Titanfall game we were making that was Battle Royale, and it was very primitive and very early. The map was not a giant map like you'd expect for a battle royale. It was as big as our engine could do at the time, which was maybe two times bigger than a Titanfall multiplayer map. And it still had Titans in it and all the normal Titanfall things. And they just said, "Hey, I've been playing this game called PUBG. It's getting popular, and I'd made this game mode. Can we spend one of our playtest days on this?" We said, "Yeah, sure, we'll try it out." And the team played it, and I guess it was a problem at the time because we're like, "Hey, this is actually more fun than this other game we're making." And so we were stuck with kind of a difficult problem to solve because it didn't, we knew that it was fun, but it had inherent problems with like Titans, and all the wall running and the high speed movement of Titanfall actually made the battle royale not quite as good as if we can strip some of those things out and make it a bit more tactical and predictable. So you know, several months go by, and eventually we convince the team and EA that, "Hey, we want to make this other game instead." And luckily, you know, EA was really supportive, and you know, it took a bit of convincing, but I think, you know, I think it's interesting. We thought we were making one game, and one random idea from one designer completely changed the course of what Respawn would work on for the next 3 years, really. So yeah, it started as just a small prototype and just gained traction within our team, and we're like, hey, this is really fun.
And something which in the modern world we live in with social media leaks and loads of things like that is very commonplace. And something which really shocked the whole gaming community was how Apex Legends launched it just completely out of nowhere. And it seemed to be this massive secret. How did you tackle that? Was it always meant to be a secret? And how did you go about making sure it remained a secret until launch?
Yeah, it's a miracle, actually. We have more leaks now than we did before launch. I think it's because now people care a lot about the game, and we knew we wanted to keep it a secret. Our thinking was that the entire world was expecting Respawn to make a Titanfall 3 or something Titanfall related, which we were initially, and we were worried that if we had come out and said, "Hey, we're working on this other game called Apex Legends," that I think people wouldn't have given it a fair shot. Because it doesn't have Titans and it doesn't have pilots. It's in the Titanfall universe, but we were worried that, people just had their minds set on wanting the next Titanfall game, and no matter what we did, if it wasn't Titanfall, they weren't going to be satisfied. So we felt that we had a really great game, and if we could just let them see it and play it at the same time with no build-up or traditional marketing, that they would just get it in their hands and they would be disappointed potentially that it's not Titanfall, but they'd be able to play it immediately and say, hey, actually, this is still pretty fun. And so we wanted to keep it a surprise. We brought in a lot of streamers and influencers and pro players into the studio. We actually ran an event in LA where we flew a bunch of them out to preview the game. They signed the typical NDAs and whatnot, but honestly, it's a miracle that nothing leaked because there's so many people involved with the launch of a game that, like I said, we have more leaks now, but I think it's because everyone cares a lot and they're looking for it and they feel important when they have special information. And, there's just a ne there's a desire for that information now. And so now we actually have a bigger problem with leaks, but, the nature of it.
And what did, was it risky launching a free-to-play live service game? Did you see it as a massive risk when you dropped, say, Titanfall 3, what you was working on for this project?
Oh yeah, it's a huge risk. I think AAA free-to-play game and a secret stealth launch are two like super risky things that luckily they paid off, or we may not be here. But yeah, especially when we're working on this AAA Titanfall game that is going to be a typical $60 product and come out in the holiday and whatever, and we go to EA and we say, hey, just kidding, we're not making that. We're going to make this other game that's not Titanfall, and we have to convince them of that. And then it's like, oh yeah, also, it's going to be free. And they're like, what? So it's a bit of a risk. Like I said, EA's been super supportive. I think Respawn had built enough respect with EA and the executives there that we got a lot of creative control over what we're doing, and they've intervened very little, if at all, on what we're working on. But they are our publisher, and we are part of EA now, so they are involved. But we're lucky that they were on board with it because it's definitely risky. Now I think it's more common. You see Call of Duty and other AAA games going free to play. But yeah, when we made that decision, it wasn't common.
And one of the reasons I think a lot of people took to Apex was the characters. I've seen loads of people talk about the characters, the depth of story behind them, and it's something personally that I think is the reason I fell in love with the game as well. I wanted to know a bit more about what the creative process looks like for creating a character. How does it start and begin with, and how does it blossom into what we finally see when that character is introduced in a new season?
Yeah, I think a character can start from anywhere. Sometimes it can start from an idea of a character personality or a piece of concept art that can inspire the design for the character. But I'd say typically it starts with a design goal. Take Rampart, for instance. Our designer, David Pereira, was wanting to build a defensive character that could hold some ground. And that's where Rampart started. We didn't know if Rampart was going to be male or female or what she would look like or her storyline. It started just with, I want to build a defensive character. And we have like a default dummy character. We actually, you can see it in one of our limited time modes we released where everyone's just this test dummy looking character. And we use that early on for early iterations on character design. And he just started building a kit for this character that had wall building, and it was actually initially a pile of sandbags. It wasn't the amped wall that we have now. And I'm not sure if it had a minigun to start, but it started from a design perspective. And once we get that character into playtest and we start playing, then we start getting feedback, that character starts evolving. And we have several characters in that phase at any given point. There's lots of prototype characters. Once we decide that one is good and we should move forward, then that's when we get the other departments involved. So then it's a conversation about, what does this character look like? What's the backstory? Concept art starts pitching concept ideas, and they might give us a board of a whole bunch of different concepts, and the team gets together and say, like, we like, version B. And then we iterate on that, and then the writing team comes in and tries to figure out, okay, who is this character in the universe, and what's their story? Why are they here? What's their motivations? So the entire character process takes about 16 months from prototype to ship. And like I said, we have several in prototype phase, but very few make it into the shipping phase. So right now we've got characters we feel pretty confident in all the way through season 12 and 13. But a lot of time, a lot of those characters are just, they're in various, as you get further out, they're more primitive and just using that test dummy player model and so hopefully that answers your question.
Today's episode is a little shorter than usual, and we are already at the halfway point. I quickly wanted to let you know that you can follow us on social media by looking at all the links in this episode's description or visiting the 99% Lifestyle website. I check every message and email that comes into the brand, so if you wanted to let me know what you think of the episode, then feel free to drop me a message. If you also wanted to follow me personally on Twitter, then my Twitter account is simply at @Connor_Reese. That's CONOR_REES. Okay, let's get back to the second half of today's episode with Chad Grenier. One of the reasons that I wanted to have a chat with you today as well is that I'm really fascinated with the whole aspect of a free-to-play live service game where it's constantly evolving, there's constant changes to keep the game fresh, feeling new, and really improving the overall game. So I wanted to talk about what the team was looking to change going into Season 6.
Yeah, Season 6 actually has a lot of big changes. We lowered the time to kill slightly, which we're seeing mixed reaction. So we're monitoring that. But I think we're trying to... Battle Royale in nature is very harsh and brutal. Like, you jump in, there's a long time investment to even finding gear, and you might not see combat for several minutes into the game, and you may lose that first fight and have to completely start over. And so we're always trying to find ways to kind of mitigate that harshness of Battle Royale nature a bit. And so when we launched the game, we added respawning, which isn't something that any Battle Royale games had at that time. And so that was kind of our second chance mechanic. Like, hey, if you die and your teammates are still alive, they can bring you back. And so now we're looking at further ways to do that. And so slightly lowering the time to kill gives players who get the drop on another player a slight advantage. With the higher time to kill, there's no benefit to strategically encountering a squad or flanking or anything like that, because with the high time to kill, you would you hit them with a couple shots, they're aware that you're there, and now it's a fair fight because everyone still has relatively high health. And so we're trying an experiment. We're going to bring down that time to kill just a little bit and try to give advantage to tactical players more than players who can just do the most DPS. So that'll be interesting to see how that goes. Another big change is the crafting system that we just introduced. That's another way to give players another option of how to play. So instead of having to try to run around the map and find certain loot or a health pack or a certain attachment, now they can collect these crafting resources and go to a replicator and build it. And so we're mitigating the RNG nature of Battle Royale looting and trying to give players another strategy for, making it to the end game, which is Now you can avoid combat, collect crafting resources, and build the gear you want instead of having to kill people and get it out of their death box. So I'm really excited about that feature, and we're always monitoring these things and seeing how the fans react to it and what they want and what they don't like. And but I think from a high level, it's important to provide players with multiple ways to play. And so these are some of the ways that we do that.
Yeah, and I imagine that a lot of the decisions are taken from various different sources, whether that being player feedback, internal decisions, and the data of people actually playing the game. Would you say that there's one area where decisions are more heavily changed because of? Is it more heavily based on player feedback? Is it more the data that you see?
Yeah, it's really three things. It's we collect data for the game, and so the data is really important to have, but you never want to make decisions purely based on data. Data is mostly a reflection of what happened in the past, not what you should do in the future. So we do have the data available to us. We're all over the internet daily. We have a whole team that collects player feedback from online and wherever else we can get it. And the third component is just, our own instincts. We're gamers and designers, and we have our own thoughts and ideas for the game. And I wouldn't say any one of those is weighted more heavily than the other. I think they're all important. I think the thing that's tough is taking player feedback and knowing how to respond to it. And this goes for internal feedback as well. If we do an internal playtest on a legend or a map change or whatever it might be, whatever change that's in the game, we do daily play tests just with the development team, and we get a lot of feedback on that as well. And the feedback is just someone's, it's exactly that, it's the feedback. It's not the action item of how to solve that feedback or address it. And there's a skill that you can never master, but over time, hopefully you get better at it, of taking that feedback and knowing what that person needs to address the feedback, because it's often not exactly what they're saying. So there's like a saying of Henry Ford saying, if you would have asked people what they want, they would say faster horses. And he knew that that was the problem. They wanted to get somewhere more efficiently, but he had to invent a car. And so that's sort of the same thing. If somebody says, I don't like this change because of X, it's like, okay, the answer might not be Y, it might be, Z. So we hear player feedback, and we have to translate that into, okay, what do users want, and what do they need? Because they're not always the same. Sometimes you do have to just give them what they want. Sometimes, but yeah.
Yeah, and I know I've already mentioned this, but congratulations on the Season 6 launch. It's been out for just less than a week as the time of recording this. And like you mentioned, there's been a lot of changes, map changes, character changes, and introduction of a new weapon. And now you've had all of this, I suppose the players and the fans kind of play testing all of this for you. Is there anything which you're not quite happy with or that you're looking to perhaps alter or change going forward?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is the devotion and the LMG meta right now. We actually just patched yesterday some devotion issues. I think there's the devotion is a little bit OP right now, and we're addressing that. We also reduced the quantity of them in the map. We reduced the frequency of the gold armor. It's always hard when we do internal playtests. We're playtesting with a couple hundred people daily, and then the very first hour that the game is out, we've got millions of people having played that content, and so you always get different feedback, and the game plays differently in the live game. One of the biggest challenges for us is that when you're playing the live game, there's very little wait between matches. There's millions of players playing the game at any given point, and so when you hit play, within seconds you're in a match. And that's not the case at Respawn in our daily playtests, because we don't have millions of people. We sometimes have to wait several minutes between matches, and that makes you play differently. It makes you play more cautiously and more carefully, and you don't want to die. Versus the live game, you may charge and run and gun and take those chances, because if you die, that's okay. You can start another match right away. And so things tend to play a little bit differently internally. So yeah, I don't think we realized the devotion was so OP until it went out into a live game. But that's the beauty of live service, we can constantly tweak and tune the game, and it's never really done.
And something I always like to ask people who work in like teams like yourself and that are in the position that someone like yourself is in is more looking at how you think that the people you work with would describe you as a game director of Apex.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's a tough question. I think people would probably describe me as the... Well, they're probably all going to listen to this and say, oh my god, no way. But hopefully the level-headed, logical person who stays calm in the, you know, no matter what's going on. I think making the game is you know, no easy task. There's a lot of, it's like a roller coaster ride of emotions and whatnot. So I think I'm the person who keeps everyone calm and collected and working together through all those challenges and struggles. You know, I value the team more than anything else. You know, we've got a really talented team at Respawn, and you know, I'm really fortunate to work with everyone. It's been an honor to work with most of these people for, you know, a long time now. And you know, I can't imagine having all the success we've had, even going back to Call of Duty and at Respawn, if we didn't have the team that we do. And so, you know, I always put the team first, and you know, I think they know that, and hopefully they do. Especially now that we're working from home, we've been doing all that we can to make sure that everyone's staying sane, and we're giving tons of time off. And actually, next week we're doing an entire team shutdown just to recharge a bit since we just shipped season 6. So, yeah, hopefully they wouldn't say otherwise.
No, that's a really interesting answer. And looking into the future, I know you aren't going to be able to share too many details on in terms of content, but you did talk about how some characters that you might have even planned up till season 12 or 13. Do you kind of have like an internal roadmap for Apex, like that spans maybe like 5 years, 3 years, 2 years? What does that sort of look like as the future of Apex?
We do have a plan, but plans always change. You know, we had a plan for the next Titanfall game and it turned into Apex, so shows you how much the plans can change. We do have, I would say, more locked in plans for things that we know we're going to be doing with the game, like a legend per season and, you know, various map changes or map updates. Stuff like that, we definitely have a roadmap and we stick to it pretty well. Everything else, honestly, we have plans, but it always changes. You know, we get player feedback and the needs change. The way people play the game changes. You know, we might think we need something and then 6 months later, we may not need it. We've got, you know, I wish I could tell you all the stuff on our roadmap. It's really exciting. And I think, you know, if we were to chat again in a few months, we could talk about it. But there's a lot of really big new things coming to the game that we're really excited about. And, you know, some of those should have probably been out already, but we wanted to give them a bit more time to be really good. We want to release things that we're really proud of and not just things that we whip together. And especially working from home now, it adds a little bit of time to all of our deliverables. So yeah, we've got a roadmap, you know, going all the way out 4 or 5 years, but you know, it's a coin flip whether or not we'll stick to that. It depends on what happens with the game, what our fans want. Things always change.
And just to close off the interview, I wanted to just quickly ask two more questions about Apex just to close this off nicely. So the first one is, what is an interesting fact that people don't know about Apex? Something that you haven't told anyone in an interview before?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. Something we haven't told people. I feel like we get there's so much interest in the lore and the universe. I feel like we're constantly answering those questions and just giving people as much as we can. But I think the stuff that people don't know about is all of the backstory of a lot of our legends. So we released the animated shorts for Wraith and Bloodhound, and I think that let people into some secrets of Apex and the characters there. And we've got more of those planned, and so you know, I wish I could say who, but there's some very highly sought after characters and favorites that are getting some animated lore videos soon. So yeah, I think I have to use that as my answer.
Yeah, and those animated shorts are really beautifully put together as well. Just the art style is just fantastic for them. And just to close things off, the last question is simply, what can people expect going forward with season six, and why should they give it a go if they haven't already picked up Apex?
Yeah, so we touched on it a bit earlier, but I think the biggest thing is that there's new ways to play the game, even within the Battle Royale genre. So crafting, huge change. All armor is Evo armor now, so you can still find the blue and purple armor in the world, but you can also just earn it by doing damage. Everybody drops with essentially a level zero Evo armor. And if you haven't played the game in a while, you may not even know what Evo armor is. So Evo armor is armor that levels up to the next tier after doing certain amounts of damage. So you do 50 damage, you go up, and then it might be 100 damage to get to the next level. And I don't know the exact numbers, but that's sort of how it works. And now that's the default armor in the game. So that's a big change with crafting. The game's always changing. I think any season is a great season for people to pick it back up again. Season 7, it's going to be the same thing. We're introducing so many new things in season 7 that we'll have a whole long list of why people should now jump into 7. So anytime is a great time to jump in. 6 is no different. If you didn't like the combat, maybe you weren't the best at winning fights. Well, now they're less important to get to the end game. You can just run around and hide and collect crafting materials and craft your gun and armor, and then you'll have a shot. Once you make it to the final round, anyone's got a puncher's chance of winning once you get there.
I hope you all enjoyed listening to today's episode with Chad Grenier. Our podcast is now available on YouTube and all major podcast platforms. Make sure you give us a follow or subscribe to be notified of all new podcast episodes and clips. At the end of each interview I conduct, I ask interviewees to give me 5 recommendations for our audience. This can be from books you should read, musicians you haven't heard of before, to other podcasts to listen to, and video games you need to play. These recommendations are sent out as a free newsletter each and every week to the 99% Lifestyle newsletter subscribers. All issues are archived on our website too. We asked Chad his recommendations, but at the time of recording this podcast, we're yet to release a newsletter episode dedicated to Chad. If you head over to the 99% Lifestyle website and click the newsletter page, you'll be able to sign up and read his issue soon. If you are listening to this podcast episode in the future, then Chad's issue may have already been released. Simply visit our website archive on the same page and you might be able to find it. If you sign up to our newsletter, then you'll also be updated about new podcast episodes, blog posts, and various product releases such as our print magazines and clothing products. Thank you again for listening to today's episode, and we'll be back very soon.